Welcome to the Iron Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harford. Jumpin' Jimmy Herbs with the bear spray. How's it going?
I'm controlling pigs and spraying bears.
I have to say that I had no idea that bear spray was a thing until, like, I don't know, 30 minutes ago, 20 minutes ago.
But you're so outdoorsy.
I am very outdoorsy. I don't want to brag, but I do have all of the blinds open so I can see the outdoors. So I'm in the comfort of the inside, but I can see the outdoors.
And no, I just stop bragging.
What I just saw a woman walking with a jean jacket on. It's Miami. Like, it's like 90 degrees and like 60% humidity. Why are you wearing a jean jacket?
Gotta look good.
Yeah, I mean, I guess so, but just seems like a poor decision. And then my other bit of news of stuff I can see, someone ran over a light pole yesterday.
Really?
So I can see the aftermath of that.
You didn't see it happen.
No, it happened when I went and got a coffee, and the light pole was up. And then when I came back, a cop, like, I was parking, and I noticed a cop stop in the middle of the road with its lights flashing. I was like, and then, like, right outside my place, I was like, uh-oh, what happened? And then walked over, and he was, like, moving this light pole that had been knocked over. And then someone from the city came, like, an hour later, and had another pole and, like, tried to put it in the ground, and something didn't work. And then they just put it back in the truck and then drove away, and nothing's happened since. So that's your
big day.
Yeah, that's the big day I had yesterday.
No, that's fascinating.
Yeah, there's a lot going on.
It's all happening.
Yeah, it's all happening. But yeah, I don't buy into bear spray.
What do you mean? You don't buy bear spray? That's fine. You don't buy into it?
No, like, there's this is a scam.
What do you mean?
This is an absolute scam.
I mean, you live in Miami, so you don't need bear spray, but, like, I mean, I don't need it either. Like, I'm in Toronto. Like, there aren't just bears roaming the streets. But, I mean, talk to somebody who lives in a, like, you know, a bear-y neighborhood.
Is it a bear-y neighborhood?
Yeah.
Is it specifically tailored towards use on bears, or are we just calling it bear spray?
No, I mean, I doubt that you or I would react very well to being sprayed with said bear spray, despite the fact that we're not bears.
Right.
I mean, that's just,
yeah, it's not like
what I'm thinking about.
It's not like a mountain lion comes along, you bear spray. It's like, ah, crap, I didn't get the mountain lion spray.
Yeah, that would just be a lot, like, just too many options to choose from.
So it's pepper spray.
You'd have to carry around, like, all these different sprays. To be prepared for the mountain lion, the bears, and what have you.
Yeah, you would really need, like, a utility belt.
Yeah, for sprays. Your sprays.
Yeah, and you can't forget the insect repellent, because those mosquitoes are lethal.
I hate mosquitoes.
I was playing in a company pickup hoops game last night, and the problem with it is it's outdoors, and so, like, the bugs just are all over you.
Yeah.
The bugs play better defense
than
anybody else.
Just like when, like, an outdoorsy person like yourself is like camping or...
Right.
Yeah.
Hey, I used to camp.
Really?
I camped as a kid. And, like, real camping. Not like, oh, we go set up a trailer and a tent in a parking lot out in the wilderness kind of deal. Like, no, this was like hike into the woods for a few miles and then set up a camp.
So you were a real man when you were a boy.
Right. I was a real man when I was a boy. And now I'm a boy now that I'm of age as a real man.
Perfect.
Yeah. Speaking of real...
Mm-hmm.
The Miami Heat, Washington Wizards, and Philadelphia 76ers are real teams.
Well, the last one, I don't know.
All right. Technically, they're real teams. They're all in the NBA, and we did off-season reports for them.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't.
No, you didn't do anything this week.
No.
Well, I mean, you worked, but you didn't write any of these reports.
I didn't write any of the reports. No, not at all.
I wrote the Heat one, and basically it's asking, do they matter again? And, like, how much do they matter?
Well, you're in Miami, so tell me, like, is there buzz there? Do people care? Are people just, like, beach?
I mean, people are always just like, hey, the beach is open 24/7.
Yeah.
So that's a popular destination because, I guess, like, they're more outdoorsy people here.
Well, I mean, this is kind of my impression of Miami is that, like, you know, if they're winning, like, cool, like, we'll go support the Heat and, like, people are kind of into it. But I just feel like they're not as into it as places where, like, the only fun you can have is going to watch basketball.
Right, yeah. I mean, it really is a different culture in terms of sports where, like, there's passion for the teams. Well, not the Marlins. No one cares about the Marlins. But there's passion for, like, there's crazy passion for the Dolphins. There's crazy passions for the Heat. But the problem is that you've kind of priced the like passionate fan out of at least the arena for the Heat. And so, like, I don't know, you still have people showing up. I mean, it is a thing where, like, they show up late. Like, that's just, like, no one's available at 7 o'clock who has the money for the lower bowl. Right. I will say, like, the upper bowl in the arena is, like, usually pretty packed and pretty loud.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, yeah, the lower bowl is just a weird dynamic, and it's because there's so many other options of stuff to do.
So, like, just in your, you know, your average day when you're just, you know, being outdoorsy in Miami, like, are you encountering people who are excited about what's going on, who are just like, hell yeah, look at my new Hassan Whiteside jersey?
Well, I mean, I don't talk to strangers. Okay. Like, I would never talk to a stranger. I firmly believe in stranger danger philosophy in life. So I'm not in on talking to people I don't know. But, like, you see jerseys out. Like, I went and played pickup ball last Saturday,
mm-hmm.
and a guy was wearing a Dwayne Wade jersey.
That's something.
Yeah, that's something, right? Like, yeah. I mean, with one of the groups of people I've played with, like, they were talking about excitement about the Heat.
Okay.
I mean, talking about Hassan. Yeah, like, I mean, I think there's skepticism because you don't, like, I think we all assume Chris Bosh is going to be okay, but there's not, like, a definite answer yet. And then there's, you know, people love Dwayne Wade here. Like, people would take a bullet for Dwayne Wade in the city. But you don't know that he's going to be healthy. And I think people want to believe that Hassan Whiteside's a real deal, and he probably is. But I think there's not enough evidence. And I actually asked this in the offseason report. It was kind of like, you know, is he actually a thing? You know, or could this end up being a Lynn Sanity type of deal where he's not really as good as his peak was, and once the league adjusts to him, it'll be much harder. I'm not saying that's what's going to happen, but I think that's a legitimate question. And so, like, there are a bunch of factors here and there where it's like, all right, well, you can matter, but if you don't have LeBron, do you really matter? And are they going to be the second best team in the East? Is that crazy to think? Are we discounting Washington too much? Is Atlanta really going to fall that much? You know, is Chicago going to make a huge leap because of their coaching situation? Like, I think there are enough questions where there's some optimism with this team and some legitimate optimism, but it's a little guarded.
Yeah. Do you think they're, like, deep enough?
I actually think this is one of the deepest teams they've had.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause last year, I mean, it seemed like after they made, and like, because of the Bosh thing, it didn't end up really mattering, but it seemed like after they got Dragic, it was like, okay, so this could be, like, this starting lineup is insane.
Yeah.
But the bench wasn't really there. But now, I feel like maybe, like, if they have as good a bench as it feels like they could have, like, you know, if they get something out of, like, Gerald Green, and, like, if McRoberts is back to what he was a couple of years ago, like, I don't see why they can't be the second best team. I'm not saying they will be.
Yeah, I think it's not crazy to think, like, if you decide, if you make your picks for, you know, records next season, and you say, you know what, I've got the Heat as a 2 seed. Like, I don't think anyone's going to be like, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, Wizards fans may not be happy with it, Bulls fans may not be happy with it, but I don't think it's going to be something where they're like, that's an idiotic pick.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that's a pretty safe gamble. I think their team is pretty deep because Mario Chalmers is a very serviceable backup point guard.
Yeah.
You know, Gerald Green is a horrendous defender, but he's a guy who can get really hot and hit, you know, 3-pointers for you. Like, I'm not a huge fan, but having him
at Winslow.
Yeah, having him as your fourth guard is not a bad thing. You know, Winslow, I'm not sure how he'll do as a rookie. I think it'll take him a little bit of time to adjust, but I think he's going to build towards the end of the season and be really good. You've got Amari, who is not a good basketball player, but he is a good scorer. Like, he provides a scoring punch off the bench, which they didn't have last year. You have McRoberts, who was actually, I mean, this team was their biggest jump in terms of any portion of the season was when McRoberts was actually on the court, and he wasn't even that good. It's just, he's a smart player who plays good team defense, and that was a huge jump for them. Like, they were like 6 points per 100 possessions better with him on the floor.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the story it was
only,
of Robert.
Yeah, it was only like 17, 19 games or something like that. It's not heavy minutes, but you could see like the potential for what his impact could be. And then, you know, Birdman, Haslam, like that's not a bad backup center.
No.
You know, especially if they're allowed to play on each other's shoulders.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really tall center.
That's a very tall, yeah. I mean, that's got to be at least 14 feet.
Yeah, I mean, that's a mean rim protector. Like,
right.
Like Whiteside, one of the better rim protectors in the NBA, and then...
And then Birdman with Haslam on his shoulders.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, I know it's cliche, but that, you know, it's cliche for a reason.
Yeah, no, I couldn't set about it myself.
Yeah. I think this team can run 10 deep, which is something they could not do last year.
Yeah, and that's why I think this team has a really high ceiling, is obviously if the starters click and if Whiteside is as good as some think, and like I'd put myself in that game. Like I think Whiteside is like really, really good. And if that's real, and if Wade can stay healthy, and I mean, he doesn't have to be healthy the entire year, but if he can stay healthy for most of it and he's there in the playoffs when it matters, like I think this team could be really something. It's just, we haven't seen it yet. And I think that's kind of the deal, is we see these teams every year. There's like a couple of teams who just don't click, and there are a couple of teams who click to a degree that we could have never anticipated. And if they can have something where they're sharing the ball and everybody's happy and everybody kind of fits into their roles, which on paper it looks like that's very possible, and especially given how mature most of these guys are. I mean, they're obviously questioned with Whiteside, but if you look at Bosch and Wade and Dragic, like I just think these guys, I mean, we saw already how Bosch and Wade sacrificed, and I think Dragic is at the point of his career where on this team he's kind of over himself and he knows that he's going to have the ball a lot. So I think there's no reason why they shouldn't get along. There's no reason why they shouldn't share the ball and be better than the sum of their parts. And I think like the sum of their parts is pretty damn good. Like this is a really talented team. And like we just said, their bench is a lot better than it was. It might not be, you know, the deepest team in the league, but I think it's one of the deeper teams in the East.
Yeah. I think that bench will struggle to play defense. But I think that they should be pretty good offensively. So it's just finding a balance of how you can really, you know, run those units together in those rotations and figure out a way to maximize the, I mean, that's what everyone has to do, but you have to figure out a way to maximize it. I mean, I guess my biggest question is like how Bosch, like if Whiteside is the real deal, how do he and Bosch exist on the court together? Because it's tough to judge it too, because it wasn't that big. I've got the numbers here. They played 18 games together last year. According to NBA.com, 18 games, 310 minutes. So it's not it's not a huge sample size. They put up 103.7 on offense, 101.5 defensively. So, you know, plus 2 per 100 possessions, you know, that's not a huge advantage. But also, like, they didn't really have that much of a chance to, like, get to know each other, right? And get to know how to play together. And it was a lot of things in flux because of all the injuries with that team and the chaos around it and everything. So maybe with a full training camp.
Yeah, that was pretty much pre-Dragic too.
Yeah, it was all Dragic and Bosch never played together.
Because, yeah, it was entirely pre-Dragic.
Yeah, 20 minutes after they got Dragic, they found out about the Bosch stuff.
Yeah, so...
I think my question, like, you know, we kind of felt like Bosch was better as a center, you know? Well, he doesn't get to play center with Hassan Whiteside out there. There is no small ball lineup with Bosch and Whiteside out there, and they seem like two important parts. So how do they make up for that? You know, how do they adjust to that to maximize that lineup? Spolster's a great coach, and I think he can easily figure that out. But it's not a definite, like, yes, this is a great fit. I think you have to see it.
Yeah. I'm optimistic about it, obviously, but I think...
Yeah, I am too.
Like, we'll see pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Whether or not that particular thing is going to work. And I don't see why it wouldn't, because Bosch can guard smaller guys and he can obviously shoot threes. So I think their spacing will still be good and their defensive versatility should be pretty good too. I think if anything, Bosch probably wouldn't want to just play center for the rest of his career anyway. Like, I think it would probably help him a little bit if he's wanting to stay healthy and wanting to stay on the court to not have to bang with the big guys as much.
Right.
So I think he'd be cool with that. I think he probably welcomes it. I think he was always, you know, he eventually embraced the role because it was working, but I don't think he ever loved playing center. And he'll probably, I mean, when they're not playing the two bench guys, like, on each other's shoulders, then Bosch will probably play some, like, backup five, too.
Yeah, you throw him with McRoberts out there, that should be a good combination. I think the weird thing too is like I'm not sure how much of a defensive difference maker Whiteside is. Like he can block shots. He's a good shot blocker, but
I think he's a deterrent. I don't think guys like to drive on him.
Yeah, he probably is, but I also think that I mean that defense was much worse with him on the floor. Mm-hmm. But there's also a lot of noise in that because there were times where they were just scraping together lineups.
That's the thing.
So it's hard to determine like where is the balance there between what he was able to do and what he's capable of doing.
You know? I mean that Heat team is really weird. They're like, oh, there's Henry Walker. Right. Oh, that was starting. Like,
there,
oh, cool.
There were times where like Henry Walker and Michael Beasley were key members of that lineup at the same time.
Yeah.
No, it's not that I'm doubting Hassan Whiteside. I just think that they're to just go out there and say like, no, he's a huge difference maker on defense. Blah, blah. Like, we don't really have evidence to see that. I think in theory it makes sense, but I got to see it a little bit before I just completely buy in.
Yeah, I think that's why a lot of people will like pick the Bulls to be like the second best team.
That's probably
it feels safer.
It's probably safer,
but I'm not sure that's right. Like I haven't thought about it enough yet, but I wouldn't like I might say the Heat like for the second best team as a preseason prediction. I don't think that's crazy at all because I think they're probably the most talented team outside of Cleveland.
Yeah, I mean that starting lineup is ridiculous.
Yeah,
and the bench is solid.
Yeah,
yeah, it seems to fit well. Like you could use a little bit more shooting than the Wade Deng wing core, but mm-hmm. Bosch stretches the floor. Dragic was amazing as a shooter for them last year. Like, you can make it work.
I just think, like, it's crazy what the Heat have been able to do since losing LeBron.
Like, that's kind of what I wrote, is, like, you think about it, the year since LeBron has left, like, how much has changed with that team, as you would expect, but how much has changed in a really good way. I mean, I don't think you could have put together a much better team than what they've done.
Yeah.
And then it's just a question of, like, all right, if they're healthy, if they end up facing the Cavs in the playoffs, how much of a scare can they put into them? Like, I'd still take LeBron and his guys, because that's a really good team, and they have LeBron. Mm-hmm. But I think they could make it interesting. Like, I don't know that it'd go more than 5 or 6 games, but I think those would be a tough 5 or 6 games.
I just think it would be crazy. I think both fan bases would be going nuts, and, like, if that was the conference finals, I think we'd be really lucky to see that. I just keep thinking, you know, like, they almost lost Chris Bosh too. Like, this was almost a full, like, disaster summer last year where they would have had to reload. And Wade would have been kind of their number one guy when he was just not really that guy anymore. But now they have this, like, really balanced team. And they got Dragic for, like, draft picks. And they stumbled into this Whiteside phenomenon. Like, I think part of it has been kind of lucky. And then part of it has been really smart and opportunistic, and you know, I mean, I don't think the league knew that Dragic was suddenly going to be gettable, and the Heat maintained enough flexibility that they could go get him. And I
Pat Riley doesn't care about the draft, so he just
not at all. Although he didn't care about the draft, yet somehow he gets Justice Winslow with the 10th pick. Like that was another scenario where they just got so lucky,
right?
And you need that to be a good team, and it just seems like that's like what they've gotten almost entirely, aside from, you know, the horrible Bosch medical scare in the past year.
So speaking of luck in the Eastern Conference, is it fair to question whether or not the Wizards are as good as they appeared to be in the playoffs, or were they just lucky that they caught an imploding Raptors team? I'm not trying to diminish what the Wizards did, but
I thought they were good against Atlanta too. Like,
yeah, I mean, they were good against Atlanta, and the John Wall injury really screwed with things. I still think Atlanta wins that series, but that definitely made it a struggle.
No, I think they found what worked for them, and they should have been doing it all year long.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. It's like we see this way in which they should be playing, or at least we assume they should be playing, and it's a thing of, like, does Randy Whitman realize, like, this is the way to maximize? Because you look at that lineup, and you look at, you know, with Gortat and Nene on the floor, it's good. It could be so much better, though. And they have the weapons, and they have the personnel, and opening the floor up for John Wall to find passing lanes and find driving lanes and just destroy a defense – It just seems like it's too good to be true, and then there's some pullback. And so the way they've kind of sculpted their offseason after losing Paul Pierce...
Had a very sculpted offseason.
Very sculpted.
Those offseason muscles.
The emergence of Otto Porter is really nice. They had some good pickups. The Jared Dudley surgery sucks, but he should be okay, I guess. I don't know. I don't know what that's going to do. But
no, I think like they needed to do it now, but he'll be there when it matters.
We hope so, yeah. I mean, he should be. And it looks like they... I mean, I don't know. With the way the offseason went, like it kind of looks like they were... moving towards like a, yeah, we understand small ball's the way we need to go, but I think we still question whether or not that's going to be a regular staple for them.
Well, I just think that says so much about Whitman. Like, I think that's so funny that we question it all because, I mean, we've talked about this on this podcast before, is like, people were calling for it all year long, and they were not good at the end of the regular season at all. And as soon as they made that switch in the playoffs, it was just like, oh, right, yeah, the thing that everybody thought would work, it does work.
Surprise.
And now they lost Pierce... But they replaced him with, like, three guys because they got Oubre, Allen Anderson, and Dudley.
Yeah.
And I think doing that, to me, it signals that they're absolutely going to embrace this, spread the floor, go small, give Wall and Beal a room to just be Wall and Beal and be great. And the fact that we're still like, maybe they won't do that, I think that says a lot about how stubborn Whitman was for the vast majority of last season. And I think... Yeah, like Wizards fans probably are still a little scared of that because Wizards fans were like very loud in denouncing the way that they were playing and the style they were playing and the effort they were giving in the second half of last season. And I think it was a really encouraging playoffs and they should be really optimistic and they probably are, but I do think there's still a little bit of concern there.
God, I didn't realize they went 15 and 19 over the last 3 months. Like I knew they were struggling, but...
Yeah, I mean, that was a weird thing about that Wizards-Raptors series is like, both teams were playing really badly going into it.
Right.
And then it was like, well, are they both going to recapture what they did before, or is one of them going to? And obviously one team figured it out and the other one kind of imploded, but it did really feel like going into that that it could have gone either way.
Yeah. And Pierce really wasn't good during the regular season.
Like he was okay. And then he was great in the playoffs.
Yeah. That, well, yeah, that's the thing. Like, I think we look at that and we're like... We look at it and we go, what? Pierce was so important for them. How did they replace that? It's like, well, in the regular season, he wasn't. I mean, he was good. They were, yeah, he was fine. Like, he shot threes really well.
I think what he brought was a maturity and, like, an attitude to that team. Like, I think we talked about this during the playoffs is how Beal seemed to be, like, a different guy. Like, he was...
Right.
He was, like, almost arrogant, which is, like, so, like, never a word you'd associate with Bradley Beal before Pierce showed up. And I think you could, like, directly draw a line from Pierce's arrival and how those guards played in the playoffs. I think Wall had a little bit more of that in him already. But I think he did bring exactly what they needed. And he brought them a confidence that they didn't necessarily have because he had been there before. And maybe they missed that, but also maybe based on... You know, getting to the second round the last 2 years, they don't need that anymore, and they have other veterans on the team, and they don't have guys that won a championship like him necessarily, but I think Dudley's a great locker room guy. Allen Anderson is a good locker room guy, and on the court, pretty much replaces what Pierce did. I think they're in a position to build on what they did last year, just as long as they actually go forward playing that style.
Yeah, and that, and you know, Matt wrote the offseason report for the Wizards, and his last question is, did the Wizards slip in the Eastern Conference? And that's an interesting question because you kind of have to decide, like, all right, which teams got better? Did the Wizards get worse? Did the Wizards stay the same?
It's more about what other teams did, right?
Well, I don't know, because if the Wizards play small ball next year, not exclusively small ball, but a lot mostly, more small ball than they did, I don't think there is a slippage. I think that's a huge improvement.
Yeah, well, because I think
so. It's a stylistic thing.
You play that way,
and right?
Beal's still going to improve just based on the fact that he like works hard as hell and he's really young. And Porter, I mean, the Porter that we saw in the playoffs was just a totally different guy. Like he was just so confident and so. It was just, I think, when he has a bigger role and he knows exactly what he's supposed to do, he fits really well in that team. And I think it's reasonable to expect that he'll build on that, and it's reasonable to expect that they'll get something out of these additions on the wing that they had this summer. So I think they've improved.
I mean, I think
just we don't know. Like, the Heat have definitely improved. The Raptors might have. The Bulls, we'll see. It's the same team, basically, but maybe their offense is better. The Cavs should be better after a year together and figuring out who they are a little bit. Like, it's the East is just better than it was last year. So
right.
Even though Washington's better, we don't know if they're, like, relatively better compared to the rest of it.
Right. I mean, I think that if they play small ball, I think if they play faster pace, more small ball, they will end up, you know, competing for the 2 seed. And
yeah, I think they're in that mix.
The funny thing, too, is, like, I could definitely see a scenario in which the Wizards get the 5 seed, but I don't think that means they're complacent or have a worse season. I think it just shakes out that way, and I think that they could be pretty dangerous in the playoffs even as a 5 seed.
Yeah, same. And I think that's just something that we're not used to saying about the East, but I think that's right. Kind of true now.
Yeah, like, whereas last year it would be like, oh, if you're only the 4 or 5 seed going into the playoffs, like, no one really cares.
Yeah.
Like, no one really cares about you. You're probably not good enough to do anything. Well, we saw a switch in them get flipped, and they played just a much smarter brand of basketball. And so if you can expect that to be their brand of basketball moving forward, I don't think it matters where they're seated in the East. I think they're dangerous.
Yeah. No, So I think I would say they had, like, a really good offseason simply because once it hit, like, news hit that Pierce was going, it was like, well, what are they going to do? And then they, like, handled it, like, way better than anybody could have expected. I mean, they'd already sort of prepared by getting Oubre.
Yeah, if Dudley can return from the injury, you know, he's a great addition. He was so good for the Bucks last year.
Yeah.
I love the Allen Anderson pickup. I'm a huge Allen Anderson guy. A guy can shoot. He's a good, solid scorer.
And he's like a playoff-ready defender, too.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm not crazy about their backup point guard situation. I'm not a Ramon Sessions guy, and I don't think Gary Neal can really play it. But I like the Neal pickup anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just not sure how much that matters. Like, maybe it does in the playoffs, but I think they'll get through the regular season totally fine.
Yeah.
With that, but I mean, who knows? Maybe they have another small pickup. Like, the point guard. Like, there are point guards in the D League that you can get. There are little moves that you can get. It's like the easiest position to, like, backup point guard. Like, the league is loaded with, like, pretty good backup point guards. So yeah. I wouldn't be shocked if they make a minor move there. But I don't think for the regular season anyway, I don't think that's really an issue.
That's probably true. Maybe it's not even that big of a concern in the postseason as long as Wall is healthy and can play 40 minutes a night.
Yeah, because he will.
Which he will.
Yeah.
And you also have to hope that Bradley Beal's healthy. Yeah, right? That's a huge question mark with him almost every year.
Yeah, and I think that's why. I mean, that might be partially why he doesn't have an extension yet, right? Like,
yeah, maybe. Trying to determine, like, what the cost effectiveness is.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he'll get the extension because they'd be foolish. I mean, well, I guess they wouldn't be foolish because restricted free agency, they're probably not going to lose him unless they decide to lose him. But
yeah.
But I would think you would just want to get that distraction out of the way.
If I was them, I would.
Yeah.
Especially because of the cap thing. But I mean, that's something that people are going to be monitoring.
That actually is going to be really interesting moving forward, too, is like because the extension game used to just be like, oh, yeah, this guy could get the max because it's just off the rookie deal. But with the new cap coming in, like, all those new extensions are going to be on the new cap.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, like, it's going
to. Are you really going to give someone. Before it was like, oh, you can give them $464 or something like that.
Yeah.
And it's fine. I know it's all relative because of the percentage of it all, but that's still a big jump in money to commit to someone, whether it's the percentage or not. Like, that's a big jump. So whatever that new jump would be, I don't know, 490 or whatever it would end up being, that's a bigger question.
Yeah, and he'll get paid. It's just, I think it would help him if he just stayed healthy for an entire season first.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, yeah. If he doesn't get an extension and he goes through this season with a lot of, or, you know, misses, I don't know, only a handful of games this year, his value goes way up. in terms of like negotiating the restricted free agency.
Yeah. And I mean, he's like, honestly, if they play the way they did in the playoffs and he keeps getting better, like, this is potentially a fringe all-star guy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, he's that good.
Yeah, I agree. And then the Sixers.
The real team.
I don't know. I don't know. I really don't know how to talk about
them. Is that your official stance on the Sixers?
Yeah, it's just me stumbling over the words I don't know a lot. They didn't really lose anything. No offense to Jason Richardson and Thomas Robinson.
Yeah, I mean, they had another Sixers offseason.
Yeah, like, the trade for Stauskas is interesting because they really do need shooting.
I loved that.
Yeah, and so, like, that's not a bad risk to take.
And they also got the pick swaps, and that was just a home run of a trade.
Yeah.
Talked about it before, yeah.
Yeah, we've talked about the Okafor thing a lot on here. Like, I'm a fan of the move. Mm-hmm. You know, the Joel Embiid situation sucks, but whatever. Now we know, like, all right, we got another year to wait until maybe we get to see him be a healthy guy. They're still doing their rebuilding process, in which they're really bad and they're okay with it, because that has been the one thing that I've really wanted to make sure everyone's aware of, or at least we're all like kind of in agreement on, is like, yeah, they're really bad, but they really are developing players.
Yeah.
Like, there is some serious player development going where they're teaching them defense. I mean, that was a pretty good defense considering the level of talent.
I thought Brown did an amazing job last year.
Yeah, like, he's a real coach. Like, this isn't a Tim Floyd situation with the Bulls where, not that they lost, you know, Michael Jordan by any means and Phil Jackson and all that, but, like, Tim Floyd took over a rebuilding team and he was a terrible coach. Like, Brown is an actual coach in the NBA, and he's doing a really good job, and his development staff and assistant staff does a really good job, and has turned a couple of guys who probably wouldn't have been NBA players otherwise into, you know, at least rotation guys on a bad team, which is a huge...
Well, I mean, like, guys, like, I mean, Covington is, I think, would be in a rotation on a good team.
Yeah, no, I think he'd play for, I think, I don't think there are many rotations in the league where Covington wouldn't play.
Yeah.
I think Jakar Sampson...
And that was a guy that anybody could have had.
Yeah, exactly. I think Jakar Sampson will turn into a pretty good rotation guy.
I mean, he's a crazy athlete.
Yeah. I think he's a
defender.
Yeah, he needs to learn how to shoot, but I think he's got, like, he's made some significant strides. I don't know, like, they're going to be terrible, and they're going to shoot for the worst record in the league. I don't know if they're going to get it, because they're really bad at, oddly enough, they're really bad at getting the worst record in the league, because there's too much coaching. But this is part of the plan, and they're executing their plan, and so I think you look at their offseason, it's like, yeah, they did what they're supposed to do based on what their goals are. It's just weird.
Spend that much time, like, getting into it, because it's like, until they sign a free agent, like, until they do that, which, like, just beyond minimum guys, I think he just doesn't want to do yet. But until then, it's just like, well, I mean, we know what they're doing. Like, we get it.
Yeah.
And they're developing guys, and they're trying to build a culture, and they're trying to build a specific culture of, like, they want to run, and they want to play good defense, and they want to make good decisions. And I mean, it'll be interesting to see how Okafor fits into that. But I mean, we essentially get the plan, and it's been obvious for a long time, and they're going to maintain flexibility, and they're going to make more moves during the season, because they always do. And I mean, the summer's the summer. Like, I thought the Stauskas move was great. And, like, the Okafor thing was, like, we're just going to take the guy, like, the most talent available, and, like, we've dissected that, but I think it's really not that complicated. Like,
no,
they're doing what they've done the entire time, and the Embiid news is probably the biggest news of the offseason from them for me, because I, like, we've both talked about it. This is, like, a potential franchise player, and again, they're not going to have him for a year, so we don't know what's happening there, but that wasn't really in their control. So
yeah,
they're gonna just keep on Sixersing, right?
Right, they're gonna keep on Sixersing. I would like to see a little bit of offense out of that team, just because they've been so bad offensively. I mean, that's really the thing, is, like, they just can't score because they don't have anybody who can do it. And so,
well, now they have Stauskas shooting,
right?
Pierre Jackson,
Okafor should be able to score.
Their offense is going to revolve around him, right? Like, he's going to get as many touches as he can handle.
I would hope so. I mean,
yeah,
he's really the only guy they have. Like, I'd like to see what Isaiah Cannon does after a full training camp and preseason with them.
Yeah.
I'm a believer in Isaiah Cannon, but, you know, it wasn't great with him when he went over there during last season. So, I don't know. Like, they won 19 games 2 years ago. They won 18 games last year. I know it's really early to project stuff. Do they get to 20 wins?
Sure. Like, exactly 20.
Exactly 20. All right. there you go. That's progress.
Yeah.
Unless, well, it's not progress if they're trying to be the worst and there's someone with wins in the teens, but sure. Who do you think ends up being their most used point guard next year? Between Tony Roten, Isaiah Cannon, Pierre Jackson, or somebody we've never heard of?
Is McConnell on the team?
I don't believe he's under contract, but he will probably get a camp invite, I would assume.
I think Roten is going to be the starter when he's healthy. But I don't think he's going to be healthy for the beginning of the year. Is he? Maybe he will be.
Yeah, did he blow out his ACL?
Yeah.
When did that happen? Sometime during the season, so that could be rough. I'm going to go.
I think that's kind of.
I'm going to ride or die with Cannon.
Yeah, I mean, that's your guy.
That's my dude. I love watching him play, and he can shoot. That's what I'm going with.
I
want
to see Pierre Jackson get a chance. But he should at the start of the year. So, I mean, that was, yeah, I mean, I did a little story on him in Las Vegas, and it was cool just to see him playing basketball again because he had a really weird journey. And
really weird.
I mean, he can score, man. Like, yeah, he was setting records in the D League for that very reason. And I think it'll be the balance of, like, I mean, his last year in college at Baylor, he was like basically a pure point guard, and then since then he's gone back to being like a sort of Nate Robinson type. And if he can do a little bit of both, I think this is the right team for him. Like,
he can play. I mean,
they're gonna give him a chance.
Yeah,
so.
He's a legitimate NBA player, I think, as long as he's healthy. Yeah, I mean, maybe he's the guy. He was stupid good in the D League. Oh, my God. I'm just now looking at his 29 a game.
Yeah. he just lit it up. Yeah. And
29 and 6. Wow.
Yeah.
He can play. All right, we've got a little bit of news to go over. Jonas Valanciunas, your boy.
Your boy is getting
4 years, $64 million. As an extension?
I said this on Twitter. He's been making the same, like, jokes since he was a rookie. Like, he's just been doing this Borat impression where he's like, oh, very nice. And it's like, well, Jonas, like, we know, like, your English is really good now.
Hold on, you keep doing this,
like, it's a stale joke. Like, you're a $64 million man now. Like, I just think he needs to step up his humor game.
Hold on. Your big analysis of this Jonas Valanciunas contract extension is that his jokes aren't fresh?
Absolutely.
Wow.
I mean, I think it's time that he comes up with something fresh here.
Yeah, I mean, you're not wrong. I'll tell you that.
And on the court, I think it's a good deal. I think it's a steal, actually.
Yeah, with the cap jump coming and the money available, like, Pelicans love to correct this, like, oh, Ashik only got 4 years, 44, really, because last year's non-guaranteed. Sure, but he also got 5 years, $60 million potentially. Yeah. Right? Like, the fact that he got $60 million over 5 years and Jonas is getting 64 over 4 years, like, that seems like a steal to me for Toronto. That you don't have to pony up a huge amount of money for him. Now, I get it, like, he's had his limitations. I think part of that is the way they've developed him and utilized him and not trusted him
mm-hmm.
with minutes, and granted, it's probably on him to earn more of that trust. But I think there's a lot more there than they've unlocked. And so,
also, they don't have Amir Johnson anymore to play center.
Right, so maybe that gives them no choice of, like, all right, we got to play this guy more. And
I think that's absolutely what's going to happen.
And it gives him confidence, and the confidence ends, it gives him opportunity, which can give him confidence, which can give him production and development, right? Like, that's a whole chain reaction of things.
I just don't see, like, Biombo being on the court in the fourth quarter ahead of Valanciunas. Like,
I mean, if that happens at a certain point, like, I don't know who Valanciunas' agent is, but you've got to just, like, light the office on fire.
Burn down
the building.
Raptors' new practice facility.
Yeah, like, if Biombo's playing the fourth quarter over Valanciunas, you just You go full arsonist.
Wow.
I normally don't advocate for felonies, but you've got to go full arsonist in that situation.
Is that a fact you normally don't?
Oh, no, I almost exclusively advocate for felonies.
Okay, yeah, no, that's what I thought.
Okay.
Gotta call you out. Gotta keep you honest here.
I like it though. Like, I like the move. I like the deal for him. I like him as a player. I really do think there's more there than they've allowed to surface. And that's not to take the onus off of Jonas.
Yeah.
But you know, because he could definitely play better and do more. But you know, I'm in. I think it's a good contract for him, especially with the market for big men. Like, I think that's kind of a steal.
You don't find guys like this. Like,
guys who do Borat impressions in 2015?
Yeah, that's a nice Jonas bonus there. Wait a minute.
Ooh, no. Jonas bonus.
No.
The Jonas bonuses could end up pushing this to $70 million. I still like it.
I actually tweeted yesterday. There was no Yobo because Woj initially tweeted that there was it could go up to 70, and then he corrected himself a few minutes later. So
that's unfortunate.
I know, but I just, you don't find guys that young that can score in the post the way he can, that are also that long and play hard like he does. And I think there's certainly, I think it's fair to say, based on the hype about him coming into the league, that he hasn't been quite the defender that some people thought he would be.
Sure.
Because there are all those like Joakim Noah comparisons and stuff like that. But I do think he tries on that end, and I think there's room to get better there. And the Raptors defense collectively, it wasn't all him. I think he had to make up for a lot of mistakes, and he was going up higher than he needed to on the pick and roll a lot of the time, and I think that's going to change next year. I just think you could see him making a leap defensively next season, the sort of leap that they wanted to see last year. And if that happens, then you're looking at a guy who can score in the post and protect the paint, and that is normally like a max guy, and they didn't have to max him, so they're betting on the fact that they know him, and they know that he cares and he works hard, and they think they can develop him to be one of the better centers in the league. And if they're right, then it's a steal. If he remains exactly the player that he is now, then I still think it's a good contract, but it's not like a great one. But I think it has the potential to totally turn into a great one.
Yeah. His individual number, it's weird. This is like a whole, like, you know, metrics versus eye test kind of crap or whatever. But like, his individual numbers were actually really good.
Yeah.
12 points a game, 8.7 rebounds, 1.2 blocks, 57% from the field, 78% from the free throw line. Take this for what it's worth, but it's a decent little measurement of like a 20.6 PER, 62% true shooting percentage. You know, like, I mean, solid numbers. Like, numbers where you're thinking like, hey, this guy should probably play more. But there was...
Yeah, well, I think a lot of people thought he should play more.
Yeah. There's, you know, and whatever, like, maybe it's not good for him to play more. Like, maybe he shouldn't have been out there. I don't think Dwayne Casey really gave him a proper opportunity, but I also am not behind the scenes there, so I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting the way that he's been handled in Toronto, because, like, he started right away, and he's gotten a lot of minutes, like, for a young guy, but there were lots of times where he's pulled at the end of games.
And to be fair, they were much better with him not on the floor.
Yeah, and sometimes you just can't argue with that.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, they had the luxury of having Amir Johnson there, that they can play at both power forward or center, and, like, not having that, I think it's just kind of like, okay, like, this is, we've just invested in you, and we've given you all this money, we're going to give you some more touches now, and we're going to ask you to just be our number one and number two rim protector, and... Sure, they have Biombo there to come in and protect the paint. That's kind of his job as a bench guy. But I do think that at this point, it's like you're just not going to see this him handled the same way anymore.
What do you think about this as a lineup? Corey Joseph, Kyle Lowry, DeMar DeRozan, DeMar Carroll, Jonas Valanciunas.
Yeah, I think you'll absolutely see that.
That could be a really, really potent lineup on both ends of the floor, because Corey Joseph is a crazy defender.
Yeah.
Like, really good. Obviously, DeMar Carroll, very good defender. Lowry used to be a good defender, and maybe if he doesn't have
to do... He is at times a good defender.
Yeah, when he doesn't have to do so much, then he could, you know, maybe return to at least some of that. DeRozan's a solid defender, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he's not, like, a lockdown guy, but there aren't a lot of those guys.
Yeah, but like he makes you work.
Yeah. He's a smart defender. Where
yeah, he's in good position. I feel like I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong about this, but I don't feel like I look at their games often and go like, what the hell is DeMar DeRozan doing?
No.
You know?
And you used to like he's
yeah
come a
oh
long
absolutely
way.
Yeah. 2 years ago absolutely did. And then Valanciunas, you know, trying to anchor a team with smart defenders on the floor, that obviously helps.
Yeah. I think we'll eventually get to the Raptors offseason report and talk about what they did, but like it's very obvious that like they had one goal this summer and that was to upgrade defensively, and they've really done that.
Yeah.
And I think Jonas is one of the guys who will benefit from that, because if he has to worry less about helping his guards who get beat off the dribble every single time, then it's going to be easier for him to stay back there and protect the rim, which is what he's actually good at doing.
Right.
He's not that good at, like, guarding the pick and roll, and, like, he's not that Joakim Noah guy that people thought he might be. And, like, they're working on that, and every summer they're trying to help him get quicker and be in the right spot. But I think he's going to be a guy that's better around the basket than he is sticking with smaller guys in the perimeter. That's just the way, like, he's just this huge, massive guy.
Yeah. He was solid protecting the rim.
Yeah.
46, opponents were 46.5% against him at the rim this year, which is in line with, man, who, I just saw someone the other day. Who was that in line with? Hassan Whiteside, Andre Drummond, Tim Duncan. All in the 46% range.
Yeah, and people don't really think of Valanciunas as that kind of guy.
Yeah.
But he's really long, and he's physical as hell down there. Like, he's rough, and sometimes players don't like that.
Yeah, so if you're facing the Raptors, keep him away from the rim. That's my scouting report for things they probably already knew.
No, you just figured it out.
Yeah.
Nobody's ever had that thought.
Stopping the Raptors is no longer a pipe dream. Hey, speaking of pipe, J.R. Smith.
I don't get it. Explain that joke, please.
I don't get it either. J.R.
Smith. I want you to be very specific.
J.R. Smith re-signed. He's big into the Alaska oil game. That's
okay.
What I'm saying. He's re-signing with the old Cleveland Cavaliers for less money than he could have gotten.
Yeah, so the offseason went exactly how he wanted it to, right?
Yeah. That's the funny thing is...
the game plan is always to sign in mid-August.
Yeah. That,
or late
he,
August,
So he's getting a 2-year deal that's essentially a 1-year deal.
Yeah.
Because I think we all believe he's going to opt out again, especially with the jump in cap.
Yeah, unless something happened. Like,
yeah.
This is like guys want a player option in case they get
or not opt out, but opt in, or whatever you want to phrase it. And he, because the team that trades for him won't have his bird rights, it essentially gives him a pseudo no trade clause.
Right.
Like, you need his permission to trade him because of that fact. He was opted out of $6.4 million. He's going to get $5 next year. I have asked this on Twitter. I wonder if Cleveland sold him on this dollar amount by saying, like, hey, with the luxury tax penalties, it's like we're paying you more. And he was just like, oh, cool.
Yeah, it's like they're paying him more.
Right, exactly.
It's not like he's getting, no.
Right. Matt Moore probably won't agree with this, but, like, this is a smart move for the Cavs.
Unless they had a replacement lined up, then, like, I don't see why.
Yeah,
I don't see
you
could spin this as a bad move.
You could argue that Mo Williams was his replacement, which I think is a very fair argument, because Mo Williams was really good shooting the ball last year.
But he's, like, 6'1".
Sure, yeah. But that's the thing, like, if J.R. Smith even has just a decent NBA Finals, I don't think we're, like, laughing about this, right? Or laughing about anything about it. Like,
he had
a really good run with Cleveland after the trade, until the NBA Finals, where he was a disaster up until, like, the last 2 minutes.
He had a rough first round of the playoffs,
of game
too.
Six. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
But he was so good. He was so good against the Hawks when they swept him. And so, you know, like, I think that...
He was good. Like, honestly, the whole, you know, second half of the season, like when he got to Cleveland and then like the second and third rounds of the playoffs, I just thought he fit in so well. Like, he just played off of other guys.
He shot a ton of threes.
He didn't really try to do too much, and that's when he gets in danger, is when he starts just like screwing around. And, you know, the shots didn't fall in the finals, and that's what people remember. And I think he had a colorful way to describe his own play in the finals too. But I don't think that suddenly means that he doesn't fit. I don't think that suddenly means that
right.
They don't want him back. I think if he had a better finals, this would have been done a lot earlier, because I think this kind of killed his leverage. But I think Cleveland should have wanted him back unless they had somebody else that they were going to sign that could, like, do what he does but, like, play better defense or something like that.
Right. And
there wasn't a guy like that.
Probably aren't available in late August.
No, absolutely not.
I mean, he shot 7 threes a game for them, hit 39% during the regular season.
Yeah.
Like, he was – and that team's so deep that just even having him as a wild card in the rotation, if that's all they use him as, is just like, hey, let's see if you can hit threes tonight. Like, that's a crazy weapon for them. In so many ways, but I mean it in a good way.
And I think he legitimately got along with that team.
Okay. Yeah,
I just think it worked.
Yeah,
and he was in a terrible situation at the end in New York, and he knew that they didn't really want him. And I think it was like as soon as he got in a good situation, you started to see him be more of like what he's capable of being. And like I think the way that we talk about J.R. Smith is weird because when he was younger in his career, we saw all this talent, and he was always like, "Well, if he puts it all together, he could be a star." And he's not going to put it all together. Like that's not going to happen. But he can be a really dangerous player. I mean, the guy won Sixth Man of the Year a few years ago. And I just think at that value, it's a really good deal for the Cavs.
Yeah, I agree. Maybe not the smartest financial situation for him to put himself in, but I guess he took a gamble. He didn't win. That's the funny thing. He took a gamble, he lost, and he still gets $5 million next year.
Yeah. Sometimes when you gamble, you lose. That's what, yeah.
Sure.
That's what happens when you gamble. That's when Smith gambles.
That's
yeah.
what they say. Yeah, we're in agreement on this.
Yeah.
Okay. Our last topic. Chinese teams are chasing Carlos Boozer. Now, that's not like a ominous thing.
They're chasing him. Like their executives like running around right, when he goes to get his groceries.
Chasing him with like pitchforks and torches.
Yeah, and lots of money.
Yeah, just like, we're going to get you. But yeah. No, they're trying to sign Carlos Boozer. And my question to you is, I don't feel like we often see this NBA player is getting pursued by teams from China and then they don't sign with the team in China.
Like, yeah, I mean, usually once we start hearing about it,
yeah, J.R. Smith, Andre Blatt, Jordan Crawford, like,
yeah.
All these guys were, all of a sudden it was like, oh, the Chinese league wants them to play for them. And it's kind of like, oh, why would they do that? And then, like, I think the money's pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, he's got to make the decision, right? Like, we're assuming that this is only even a story because they're going to offer him more money than he's going to make in the NBA because at this point he's like a minimum guy.
Right. Well, that's the thing, too, is, like, we've had so many jokes about Carlos Boozer and fans don't like having him on their team and all this stuff, but, like, he's still a very serviceable player in the NBA.
Yeah, it's just
you could do
he's
a
not
lot,
what he was.
Right.
There's a difference between he's not what he was and, like, he sucks.
You could do a lot worse than him as your fourth big man.
Yeah, he's a great fourth big man. I mean, he can score, and he can rebound.
He's a good teammate.
Obviously going, yeah. And I think he's obviously going to hurt you defensively. But if you put him next to somebody who can protect the rim, I mean, he worked really well with Joakim Noah for a long time. And there's a reason why he wasn't playing in the fourth quarter at the end of his tenure in Chicago, and there's a reason why they amnestied him. But
there's a difference between, like, oh, this guy shouldn't play in the fourth quarter and, oh, this guy shouldn't play in the NBA.
Yeah, like, I think he's obviously still an NBA player.
Right.
It's just he's had such a weird career because, like, when he initially went to Chicago, he got this, like, huge, huge contract, at least for that time. That money was huge.
Right.
And he was supposed to be, like, you know, he was a two-time All-Star. He was supposed to be part of this team that was going to bring them back to being championship contenders, and he was. And it's not like he played badly there. It's just his skills diminished and his defensive flaws became, you know, they got worse and they got more obvious and people started talking about them more. And now he sort of became a joke because he's just so weird, like the way that he yells on the court and the way like he has a game that I think isn't like super aesthetically pleasing. But, like, he can play basketball, and it's just, it's weird, like, he's 33, and he was, like, a starter on the Bulls 2 years ago. and he went to being like a mostly a bench player for the Lakers, like a terrible Lakers team.
Yeah.
And now we don't even know if he's going to be in the NBA. And it is just like, it's odd because he used to be considered just such a, like one of the better power forwards in the game.
The last 2 years, one with Chicago, one with the Lakers last year, his per 36 numbers, 47% from the field, 17.6 points per game, 10.5 rebounds, 2 assists. Like, yes, those can be hollow numbers if the guy is just not any good and he's just, you know, kind of getting his own stats and hurting the team. But that's still, like, to me, that's still, like, that's really good production. I mean, I'd rather have Trevor Booker than him if we just want to throw, like, a comparison backup big man.
Like a random power forward, yeah.
But I also think Trevor Booker is really good. It's crazy to me that Carlos Boozer would be out of the league next year.
I just wonder if there's some playoff team that he'll be like, okay, I'll just go play for them for the minimum, and I'll be in the rotation.
Yeah.
But or I just wonder.
Maybe the situation is he signs in China and has the opt-out for the end of the NBA season.
Yeah. I mean, that other guys have done that before. I could totally see that happening. Yeah. That's a way to make the most money that you can and end up playing where you want to play. But I also think if he really wants to be a part of a team, he might not be good enough anymore that he's going to be guaranteed minutes when he comes back from China. So, I mean, we'll see. I mean, I think he's been linked to a few teams, but it has been really quiet. And I think if your reaction to this was like, oh, right, he's still a free agent, then like, yeah, like I think that was kind of the NBA's collective reaction to this yesterday.
Mark Stein tweeted out last night, and I was like, I forgot he was a free agent. I honestly did.
That's what I wrote this morning.
Yeah.
I just thought like, oh right, Boozer, like he's still there, and that was kind of it. Was almost the same thing that happened last year. Is he was amnestied, and everybody just expected that nobody would bid on him. But then the Lakers were just like, yeah, we're gonna take him, and it just seems so weird. And it's just, are we going to get something strange with Boozer every offseason now? I don't know.
Maybe. No. What league will he play in the year after? Like, Latvian league? Israeli league? Like, where in the world is Carlos Boozer would be, well, one of the worst kid shows possible, but it would still be something that could make
terrifying.
TV. What a horrible idea. Here's a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Who would you rather have on the team? Amari Stoudemire or Carlos Boozer?
Oh, wow. I think they're very comparable.
I think they surprisingly are. I think I'd go Amari, just because the potential.
Amari's better as like a pick and roll player.
Right, the potential to like have a microwave big man off the bench is probably more impactful than whatever steady progression Boozer may give you.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's an actual question.
Yeah, and I think they're at similar phases of their career.
Sure.
And it's just they got there in like very different ways.
Right.
But. Because Amari's was like entirely due to injury, but I mean it's sort of the same thing. Like they both signed these big contracts, and now they're kind of thought of as like, oh, they're not any good. When it's like, no, they can play, like they can like contribute to a team off the bench, but like that's it. So I think there's a place for him. It's just kind of, I think it's Carlos Boozer.
Right.
Like, I just I don't know, man. Like. I don't know which, if like...
I think that sums it up perfectly.
Yeah, it's Carlos Boozer, and he might be playing in China. He might be playing for the Blue Whales, where the Panda's friend played last year.
Sure.
Yeah.
That's a Mad Libs. last thing before
better
we go...
Better world peace, to be clear.
We had Austin Schultz tweet us, I work with a guy from Africa, and when we were getting trained, he thought bear spray worked like bug spray. He was about to spray it on his body before I stopped him.
No.
Honestly, wow. Like, if I hadn't researched bear spray when you mentioned it earlier, and I was just, like, going out in the wilderness and someone was like, oh, here's your bear spray, I probably would have done the same thing. Like, not trying to lie, I probably would have been like, oh, well, I better spray this on me. Because I would have thought it's, like, some kind of, I don't know, animal scent that...
Like bear
detracts,
repellent.
Yeah, like detracts bears. So I would have been right there with that coworker. Just
I'm,
you know,
I'm
a lot
glad
of
it hasn't happened
a lot too. Of pain.
Yeah. No, this just sounds horrible. I'm glad that our friend here was able to stop that from being a horrible fiasco.
Agreed. Well, James, we can follow you on Twitter at @OutsideTheNBA. We can read our stuff on CBSSports.com/NBA, and I'll talk to you next week.
Jonas Bonus.